You have?
Okay, so the Honorable David Neal is going to be conducting the hearing. You're going to start up soon as you get the paperwork together, okay?
Yes, sir.
I see that you have some here. Russell Martin?
Yes.
Yes. Ms. Ham? And...
Come again?
Neal? Venegas?
Who?
Ms. Venegas, is that for John Martin, too?
No, no. Neal Venegas, I'm here for Marciano Martin.
Was it John Martin, or was it John else here for? Mr. Martin?
Yes.
And Russell? Okay.
My brother?
Do either or both of you wish to speak this morning?
Yes.
I was checking with him, sir.
Okay.
So I know where I stand as I go through, make sure I don't miss anybody. Okay, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Okay, you been certified oral hearing this morning?
Yes.
Let's see, I had it right here in front of me. Okay, it's for prolonged life consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. So will you state your full name and ADC number?
John Martin. Number 0-3329.
Okay, sir. We have been having some technical difficulties, so if you have a problem hearing anything that's going on, please let us know as soon as you're having that problem.
Yes, sir.
Most of the system is non-functional, so we're trying to get this done this way.
Okay.
All right, so I'm going to go through some information there, sir, and then as I go through it, if you hear something that's incorrect, please let me know. But I'll check verification. This is basic information about the case and what's going on.
Yes.
Okay. So you're 60 years old and serving a life sentence for first degree murder, which began on September 22nd, 1988, as well as a concurrent life sentence for first degree burglary. You became eligible for parole on September 22nd, 2013.
Yeah.
But you were never certified for hearing until March 8th, 2018. There was apparently a problem with the AIM system, and it was not certifying people properly for hearings.
So,
you are certified for a 412B, which is parole with the next consecutive sentence, or absolute discharge. Due to the problem getting certified and having a hearing, if the board so chooses, we could grant a parole to your next consecutive sentence and make it retroactive to September 22nd, 2013. According to the time comp, the next consecutive sentence is to number 806 in the group of charges, which is a life sentence for attempted first degree murder.
You there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay.
Pause to catch my breath occasionally. Okay, then we'll, as for the total charges, the AO3 was attempted first degree murder, AO4 was aggravated assault, AO5 was aggravated assault, AO6 was attempted first degree murder, AO7 was aggravated assault. So you'll be moving to the AO6 charge, which is no life sentence. You have total of 5 life sentences, including the one that would be your last consecutive sentence. All of those are concurrent with AO6. So once you move to AO6, all the rest of the charges are running concurrent. Of course, that's per the sentencing documents.
Yeah.
Okay, so the board could move you to AO6 as the next consecutive, and then once you do that, then everything else is being served concurrently with that charge.
Okay.
Also, it should be noted that you were up there from New York at the time that you were convicted by a jury and sentenced on November 4th, 1990. Because of the parole in New York and the violent nature of those crimes, it was aggravated. Almost everything that you had were sentenced to was aggravated. That's why all the life sentences. And apparently you were convicted of 4 felonies totaled in New York, all of them involving dangerous situations.
Right.
Okay. So you've had minimal discipline and none in the last 5 years, sir. That's very commendable. However, you have very minimal programming also. There were 3 programs, all in 2009. Now, we don't have any support letters, but we have 2 supporters in the gallery, which is actually much better than letters. And we do have a letter of opposition from the Pinal County Attorney's Office. So I'm going to go over a brief summary of the offense. There's information there. This is from the pre-sentence report after you had been convicted. But apparently on September 11, 1988, between 4 p.m. and 5:45, it was a 20-year-old female, a 16-year-old sister, and a neighbor, a victim who was stabbed, were helping you, or helping a victim and her 1-year-old daughter move from their apartment in the 100 block West Laguna in Tucson. The victim, whose husband was in jail, had been sexually assaulted 3 weeks earlier at the apartment, and she was moving back to her parents' residence. You lived in an apartment directly across from the victim, and your brother managed the apartment complex. He came over to talk to the victim about some property taken by her assailant and a sexual assault. After the victim's sister and neighbor exited the apartment, the defendant locked a sliding glass door, assaulted and fatally stabbed the female victim. The victim's sister returned and found the sliding glass door locked. She managed to force it open rear of the apartment. She saw her sister laying on the bathroom floor. She heard what she believed to be her sister talking, and she feared she was being sexually assaulted by the defendant, who was also in the bathroom. She ran out of the apartment to ask her neighbors and his 2 friends to help her sister. She called police and her parents. When her neighbor entered the apartment, he saw the female victim covered with blood on the bathroom floor. The defendant was in the bathroom next to her. He had a knife in his hand. The defendant then got assaulted you got up and you were assaulted by the neighbor, apparently, and you stabbed him in the neck and the abdomen. One of his friends saw them struggling, and he saw the defendant stab this victim twice in the stomach, and the defendant fled. Okay. Does that sound about correct at that point, sir? Yes, that's what I'm asking you. Does that sound about correct to that point? Okay.
Sir, can you hear?
Well, yeah, I hear you. All I know that was being explained that nothing happened with me doing what they say I did. And I don't go out like that. And that was my 7th DUI and Miss Knight. And to even know it was just a 38. And I respect her husband, and he's the same too. What they said that I did not do. I'm not no criminal, and I ain't never been no criminal down here in Arizona, Tucson, Arizona. And there is no burden to this. There is that Festival Baller. My son, Robert McNabb, loaned me them videotape, all that phony bugly, but it's not what it is. And another home thing, it was all right with me. I don't know how it got messed up, but it got messed up.
Okay, sir, so...
Then my lawyer said I ain't did nothing on the last 5 days.
Okay, sir, if you didn't do anything, how did you get identified as the suspect?
The doctor, they said I was down the other, they said I was talking to Steve Romero. Well, I got caught by Steve Romero. He was coming out of the apartment. After that, I knew I was going to probation. I must have got lost. And I couldn't go this way or that way, so I got lost. But then another happened again.
Okay. Well, you were convicted by a jury, so there must have been some...
evidence?
I said, well, you were convicted by a jury, so there must have been some evidence that was presented to convince them that you did what you were accused of, but you say, you still say you didn't do that, you didn't stab anybody, you didn't assault anybody?
The knife was found over there with a few men, maybe 25 feet, or in somebody else's house, instead of no fingerprint, no blood, and how did her blood get on me when I'm struggling with a few men? Not only that, why was he always having problems with them, Robert McNabb?
Okay, but sir, you presented that information in your trial through your attorney, and the prosecution, entered the information, and the witnesses identified you. So we don't have the press report, we don't have the entire court transcript. So we went on in the trial, but apparently there was enough information presented against you that the jury found you guilty.
Yes, they did. And also the jury, the jury did it again. And they were jury sleeping. There were different things going on with the jury. They had to go back to the jury room and come back out and do it. Call on the mistrial.
Well, did they call a mistrial and you were tried a second time?
Yes, sir.
And they were convicted a second time?
In other words, the jury had to go back to the jury room because they didn't have the data right. But it came back out, and that's when the jury found me guilty.
Okay, but did you say that the judge declared a mistrial?
The lawyer did. The trial lawyer did.
Well, the judge has to declare a mistrial. The lawyer can't, he can claim it's a mistrial, but the judge is the only one that can say it's a mistrial. So did the judge declare
yes,
mistrial?
Sir. Yes, the judge did. Thank you.
Okay. And you had a second trial?
No second trial. The judge sent me 2013. I had to be set for one in 2013. And I got a 25 in life.
Okay. Well, then the second trial, was there an appeal?
My appeal lawyer, that the judge turned to my cousin. She did her job, but she didn't put in no appeal for my behalf.
Okay, I'm lost, because if there was a mistrial, there would have to be some sort of another trial or appeal, go through the appeal court to determine whether the mistrial was supposed to be upheld or anything. So anyway, the information we have is that you were convicted by a jury of the crimes, we have to make the inference that there was enough information presented to the jury that they found you guilty. So at this point in time, sir...
Yes, sir, they did find me guilty.
Okay, well, so at this point in time, I'd like for you to kind of tell us what was going on back there in those days when this happened, and how you've changed since then.
Come again?
Okay, I'd like you to tell us what was going on back in those days in your mind, in your life, what was happening when this offense occurred. Not so much about you committing the offense, but, you know, what was going on in your life and your friends around you, doing drugs, or what was going on, but also then from there, tell us how you changed yourself and improved yourself while you've been incarcerated.
Yes, sir. But back then, I was working, and driving, doing my thing, and helping people, and looking out, but it was a problem. But that was day, 1988. You there?
Yes. Okay. Well, so how have you changed? What have you done to better yourself since you were incarcerated?
I went to school, went to a lot of programs, private bed, meditation program, did a lot of staying out of trouble. And no ticket in 14 years and with y'all and many of the other y'all. Nobody been hurt here by me, so I dedicated my life to the better.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time. Any questions? Mr. Johnson.
Sir, I'm just trying to just make sure I do understand. You saying that you weren't involved in this incident, sir?
May I go back again?
You said that you weren't involved in the incident that you were convicted of?
It was a problem with me and Peter Miller. I was being attacked by him, but they don't believe that. They believe I did the crime. But according to my lawyer said I ain't did nothing.
Okay, so based on what you're saying, are you saying that you were acting in self-defense, or?
That's the truth.
Okay. What about the female?
She's my son. She never was attacked by me.
She what?
You did that?
I didn't understand what you said, sir. Could you repeat it, please?
You said about the female, right?
Right.
She was not attacked. She was attacked by two men. No, she wasn't attacked by me.
You saying that she was attacked by someone else?
That's correct.
So how did you wind up in the assault with her brother?
How did I wind up in the what?
Why did her brother assault you?
Why did her brother attack me?
Yes, sir.
What brother? There wasn't no brother in there.
Okay, well, how did the other guy attack you?
Steve Lamora.
Yes.
He's the one that was in there.
Why did he attack you?
Maybe trying to get away.
Okay. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Any other questions from Mr. Canales?
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Martin?
Yeah.
Just so that I can understand your history, you had been in prison before in New York, is that right?
Yes, sir.
What were those crimes for?
Come again?
What were those crimes for?
I think I didn't get that last time.
What were the crimes?
You were in prison in New York. What were you in prison for in New York for? What were the crimes?
I think they said robbery.
Was that the only crime, sir?
I got three charges back there. Robbery. No murder.
Thank you, sir. No further questions.
Okay, sir. There's no further questions from the board at this time, so I'm going to bring your allow your supporters to come up and make statements. So hang in there. Whichever one of you would like to come up first, please do. Your supporters are going to come up and speak on your behalf at this time. Okay.
Yes, I'm going to
move right now, and he's going to speak on your behalf, okay?
Oh, okay, no problem.
He's able to hear me through this, sir?
Pardon me?
Is he able to hear me through this?
No, that part of the audio system is not working, so you'd have to... Actually, if you'd like to step about half, you know, about halfway up here, so you're a little bit closer, because this is where I'm hearing you, okay? So state your name, and then tell us what you'd like.
My name is Russell Francis Martin. I'm the second son of seven boys and no girls, one mother, one father, born and raised in New York City. And I've been working and living in Arizona for the past 43 years as a licensed electrical contractor. I'd just like to present to you and let you know that John Martin, if he were to be paroled, he has my full support, as I've been by his side for the past 29 years and some odd months, supporting him, money, visits, food visits, whatever. As you can hear, I don't know if you know the exact medical condition, but he has a speech impediment, and he's wearing a hearing aid right now, so he can't hear too good. What he's trying to describe is the situation of how something happened, whereas I know you can't do nothing about it legally, but in essence, it appeared that, you know, we just give him a lot of years and hope that he go up there and hang himself or play basketball. But he has a better mind than that. And what I mean by that is that I know he didn't commit the crime. I would like to refer to the case of the, if you don't mind me just explaining things, the case of the guy in Tucson that was supposed to have been in Austin, the Pioneer Fire. After 42 years, they found out that he was innocent. My brother had a lawyer who quit the case and said, I'm going to paint. He went back to being a painter. And then there were other things where, as in the beginning of his arrest, they never had no Miranda rights written or said to him. And then when they took him to the police station, this is the beginning of his interrogation for 7 to 8 hours. And the beginning is that, state your name and your date of birth. And then he talked to him for 7 hours. And in the minutes at the police station interrogation, he said, I'd like to go back to my room. And he said, we know you want to go back to your room where, you mean your cell, right? He said, yes, sir. He said, well, let us just question you for a few more hours. So as all these things were happening, being disoriented, being frightened, or whatever he was in that state of mind, that's what occurred. He was helped defending the lady because in the trial minutes also, Robert McNabb, who was the deceased woman's husband, said, you know, John comes over sometime and we watch a movie, a video movie. And, you know, he don't get a beer, so I gave him a soda and I had a beer. And I lent him the tapes, videotapes. That's in the minute. And they gave him 25 life for that. And I know you can't do it about it, but these are just some of the circumstances I'm explaining that he hasn't explained. But it's a matter of the trial record where Robert McNabb said, I lent him those tapes. And he got 25 life for that. But other than that, sir, one other thing is that Harriet Levitt was his appeal lawyer, and I've been keeping in touch with her, and in 1991, she wrote me a letter, and a part of it said that I have begun work on your brother's case, and though I'm not finished reading his transcripts, at this point I believe there are numerous issues to raise on appeal, which I will forcefully argue on your brother's behalf. At least I believe it was highly improper for the judge to impose consecutive sentences, which he never put in appeal. So all I'm saying, sir, is that I know he can't be paroled because he has to go to the next sentence. And I'm hoping that, you know, through other means, he can afford a lawyer that would get him back into the courtroom because he has a house, a home, family support, everything else to come home to if he were released. It isn't that he's a troubled child, because of his arrest records in New York City. As a matter of fact, a policeman shot him in a book as he was trying to get away from something. But there was no violent crimes in New York City. He did grow up on his own. You know, my mother and father separated after years, but my mother did take care of him as much as she possibly could. He wasn't in youth houses, but as a young adult, 16, 17, maybe started getting in trouble. But that's his life history. Other than that, the only thing I would like to say is that even in his environment, now he's respected in the prison, not as a person to be looked up to, but he's looked at because he told me one instance which comprises his whole life there presently is that one of the prisoners was walking by and they was talking to him, this, that, you know, and they kind of maybe violated his faces. And he told the prisoner, he said, the other inmate, he said, what that sign say? It says, walk with God. And the guy left him alone. Amen.
Hey, no questions?
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, there were no questions. Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Donna Hamm, for the record, and I represent Middle Ground Prison Reform. I'm here for Mr. Martin today in support of his parole through his multiple consecutive sentences. Mr. Martin wrote to Middle Ground and asked us to intervene on his behalf because he was not making headway with getting the correction that needed to be made to the error that the department was making with respect to his parole eligibility date. So we also got involved, in addition to the grievances or inmate kites that he was writing to the time computation unit. And as a result, probably of all of our efforts, he was certified finally eligible in 2018, 5 years after he was supposed to be certified. So essentially, for a 1988 crime, he missed either 10 or 5 parole hearings that he could have been eligible for, depending on whether the board would have set him off for a year or heard him every 6 months from that time frame. And of course, that's a huge disadvantage to the inmate because during those 5 or 10 hearings, you get to know the inmate, you get to know his history, you get to know his supporters, you get to know his character, you get to know whether you believe and what amount of credibility you place on his testimony. And so it's a disadvantage, and I want to urge the board, if you decide to grant parole today, to consider, if not all the way back to 2013, at least because you may think, well, we wouldn't probably have paroled him on his first hearing anyway. But I would urge you to please consider at least partially retroactive, to go back to some date. He hasn't had any disciplinary history since 2000, so that's roughly 18 years. I know that the board likes to look at the last 5 years of disciplinary history, but according to the record from the Department of Corrections, it's been since 2000. I also would like to, and his work records are good, he gets excellent ratings. He may not have taken the number of programs that you would wish he took, because I heard one board member say that he had minimal programming, but it sounded like he has taken some programs that maybe not are recorded in his official record, such as meditation and some of the other programs that he mentioned. And the final thing I want to point out is his crimes occurred in Tucson, which is Pima County. You have a letter of opposition from the Pinal County Attorney, and what I suspect happened, and I don't know this, but I suspect that perhaps the board erroneously sent a notice to the Pinal County Attorney notifying them that there was a hearing scheduled. And without even checking the case, they wrote a letter of opposition, and they have no jurisdiction to oppose a case from Pima County. So I think you literally have to disregard this letter of opposition. It's not valid for a Pima County case. Mr. Martin is currently 60 years old. If you grant him parole and make it retroactive to 2013, he will not come eligible for parole again until 2038, 20 years from now, at which time he will be 80 years old. That's the earliest possible date that he could be released if you determine to release him at that time. So I would urge the board to not only grant parole today, but also to make it retroactive, because none of the missing parole hearings were, of course, of his doing. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions?
We don't have any indication of a parole in the package. You seem well researched. Did he attempt the parole? An appeal in the package. Are you aware of any appeal history?
Mr. Kionis, I only became involved in this case when he wrote to us as a result of not getting his parole hearings on time. So I have not had a chance. I'll be very candid. The first time I heard about the circumstances of his offense was here today. I talked to his brother Russell out in the hallway a few minutes ago, and he did talk about appeals and PCRs and so forth, and we're going to talk about that personally later to see if there are some open opportunities for him. But I know Harriet Levitt, she's a Pima County appointed attorney that handles appellate work for the courts, but from what I understand from Russell, she never filed the appeal. So, and unfortunately, I attempted to look up his court records so that I would be a little more familiar, but they're not published on the internet the way the Maricopa County records are. So you can't research them unless you drive to the courthouse, and I didn't have a chance to do that. And I'm not officially working on this case. I'm here today as a volunteer.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Martin.
Yes, sir.
All right. Your supporters have had an opportunity to address the board, and so we're nearing the end of your hearing at this time. So we would like to give you an opportunity to make a final statement. We just ask that you don't repeat information that you've already given us. Would you make a final statement? Let us know anything you think might be pertinent to us making a decision today. And then we'll go into discussion to make that decision, okay?
Yes, sir.
So what would you like to tell us?
Well, I'm a new man, I'm a changed man. My life is further on the mission of doing well, ordinary citizen, living normal life, pray to God, go to church, work, care for, and get in no kind of feeling, no trouble, no problem. Work with my brother Rusty Martin and pray and work today, my back today, my last day of death. And I forgive prayers to the family and everything. And there's no day will go by that I don't forget. And
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. And we would like to commend you. You have been staying out of trouble. That's very commendable. Okay, so the board will be going into the discussion now. We'll be picking up for ourselves. You may think that we're addressing you, but we won't be. So we ask that you remain silent. If there's something that is an issue in our discussion, you will have an opportunity to bring that up after we're finished, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. The board of the...
Before we go into discussing, is there Mr. and Ms. Julian Gomez here? Any victims in, for this hearing? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
Okay, sir, the board will be going into discussion now. It is an interesting case. Issues have been brought up. It's, you know, with the jury trial and everything at that point in time, but without having some sort of an appeal or anything, we have to base our decision based on what the jury found out in that first trial. I think with Mr. Martin's history of being incarcerated, he's done rather well. There's only a few programs showing, but that doesn't mean that we haven't pleaded. Well, we just don't have any verification for any certificates, which would be good in the packet if you've got them. Also, I think I agree with Ms. Hamm in the respect that he's missed enough hearing opportunities that some of the issues that might come up during a hearing, he's not been made aware of any possible issues. We haven't been able to get to know him, and it is quite a disadvantage, I'd say. And the overall totality of it, I would be inclined to grant Mr. Martin close to his next consecutive sentence, and due to the errors and aims which are to no fault of Mr. Martin, I think at this time I would be willing to make it retroactive to it would be September 22nd, 2013 would have been the date that if he would have been able to get a parole the next consecutive that he at the earliest date. So I'd be inclined to do that. But I don't want to listen to any discussion from my fellow board members.
Just to comment again, I reviewed the package as well, but are we together that his next consecutive sentence is a five count consecutive life sentence, is that correct, that runs
current?
Okay, I just want to make sure I was before.
Yeah, in the six is the next sentence, but out of the balance, okay. Life sentence runs concurrent, yeah.
I just wanted some clarification on that. Thank you.
Yes. So there would be, and that's part of the sentencing, the court sentencing documentation of that. But there's no other
question. I just want to make sure that I'm clear that you're saying you're going to parole into his next consecutive sentence and make it retroactive back to 2013.
So he would have, in essence, he would have 20 years to serve before he's eligible for parole on this next group of sentences, because we would be cutting 5 years off. And I don't know the circumstances, and you know, it's no fault of his that he couldn't get here, that it would be justified in this case. So. No other questions or concerns? Okay, well, in that case, I'm going to move to grant Mr. Martin going to his next consecutive sentence, which, according to the documents we have, is the AO6 charge of attempt to commit murder in the first degree, and it will be at least five other life sentences that will be running concurrent with it. And to deny absolute guilt. So that is my motion.
Second.
Agree. I'm trying to think if I stayed there. Did I state in my motion to make it retroactive to?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to make sure that I made that point.
Yes.
Okay, so.
I second it.
I'm sorry, sir. Yeah, paperwork and stuff, and sometimes we get confused. All right, sir, the board voted to grant you parole for an extra second of service, and it would be retroactive to the September 22nd, 2013, which would have been your earliest opportunity to have the parole granted. So, in essence, you'll have about 20 years before you're eligible to apply for another parole, and if hopefully you'll be getting some appeal process going here pretty soon, and see how that turns out. We do wish you luck, and we would like to commend you for your behavioral record since you've been incarcerated. You've done rather well there, and so you do have some good support from your brother, and now that you have Ms. Hamm on your side, you have some good support that can get in and dig into it and see what's going on with it. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right, well, that will end your hearing at this time then, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Would you put the CO3 back on the phone, please?